Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time again. That time again, man. I tuned in to Walk of the Walker. First and foremost, we don't own none of the copyrights and none of the music. We just like the vibe. This track is called Boney-ism by Boney James. Let's tap in. Let's get into it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome to Walk of the Walker podcast. I'm your man, Lou Walker. Sitting across from me is the king himself. See, I like to call myself a king, but I'm still a prince. But the king himself, OG Joe.
Hey.
Right now.
What's going on?
Yes, sir.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving, happy holidays, period.
Yeah.
How you feeling today, OG?
Well, I'm starting to feel like the holidays are upon us.
I had that one song that Dee Martin covered. It's beginning to look a lot
like Christmas.
It's beginning to look like holiday season.
Yeah, man. It brings us a certain aura and feelings in the air, you know, as the holidays fall upon us.
Yeah.
You know?
And to your point, you know, I feel that aura.
Yeah,
like as soon as the holiday season get to creeping around, you start feeling jolly.
Yeah, it's a good time of the year because I think a lot of people demonstrate their best person is on full display.
Hey, around the holiday.
Yeah, you know, and all the anguish and bitterness, you know, all that stuff kind of. I don't know if it actually go away or it just subside for the holidays, you know, and mm-hmm. you see the best of people.
I get that.
You know, so I particularly like this time of the year and wish that it would be more or a longer period, you know, than the 30, 31 days of December, you know.
Right. I feel like people use this winter holiday as clarity. A lot of people start seeing, you know, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa's coming up, Christmas coming up, New Year's coming up, and then they start to reflect all the way back to January to see where they at. Then they want to come up with their quote unquote people New Year's resolutions.
Yeah. Hey, but you know, before we get into our topic for today, I need to go back to November 5th and afterwards.
Okay.
You know, because something is disturbing about that race.
Well, let's unload on them. Let's let the people know what's concerning you.
Well, the one thing that concerns me the most is the fact that you have two candidates.
Mm-hmm.
One a former president and one is a vice president.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's almost undemocratic to let the underdog win, you know, in these kind of contests.
I get that.
You know, it seems like that a vice president are not supposed to be winning against a former president, you know. And before you chime, and that's why I felt the same way about when President Biden was top of the ticket and Trump was coming in, you know, I'm going like, well, Trump is not supposed to take down the vice president at that time. So we saw that play again,
right?
But Trump prevailed. Now, was this truly a contest of the people, or was it truly a contest of races?
That's a tough one, because the reality is, when you want to, I feel, and this is just my personal perspective, when you want to speak on the island of racism, or just in that form, period, you know, the racism, I wouldn't even say came from the Republicans, but more so just from our people. You know what I mean? Because it was so many of our people. Like, I understand if a Republican is like 10 toes on Trump. You know, we're voting Trump. But, you know, Ms. Harris came out, you know, all foot on the gas, ready to hit it. And she had literally half of us on her side. Now, I don't want to say that it's an actual half, but that's how I felt. Like, mm-hmm. I was on board. But you could tell that it was people, even black Democrats that wasn't on board with it.
Yeah.
So it was like, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So when I think about it, you know, we noticed that, and this is why I say this was a race against the race. You know,
right.
Because you got 58% of the country is white.
Yes. It's more than half. Yeah.
Yeah, 58%. And the numbers get kind of confusing because she has 66% of her votes. 66% of her votes was white.
Mm.
89% of his votes are white.
Okay.
So when I think about those numbers, then I get to see it as a racist game. And the reason why I see it as such is because when you look at the total map of the United States, Democrats got the peripheral on both coasts.
Right.
The West Coast and the East Coast.
Right.
Republicans, everything Midwest to the South. Then I started thinking, both candidates spent much of their time on the East Coast.
Yes, yes.
To me, fatal mistake for her.
I agree.
You know, I understand why because we're looking at the coast as...
his weaker side.
Well, his weaker side, but also what they call... the states that you must win.
Gotcha. The important
battleground states.
Yeah.
These are battleground states on this coast, on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Battleground states on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. A couple. She failed to realize that. Yeah, we got to get the battleground states. But guess what? You got the mid section of the country that you got. Those are the people you need to be appealing to.
Mm.
Granted that, you know, they offer more electoral votes on the battleground states. But guess what? They're not the only people because they're electoral votes in all the other states.
Absolutely.
And many of the electors are from many of those states.
Absolutely.
So if you're not appealing to those people that are in the center,
right,
you can't beat the war here. You can't win it from just the battleground states.
That's true.
You know, particularly, you don't know who the electorals are.
Hmm.
Who are those people?
That part.
Those are the people that actually gave him 312 votes to her 226.
Exactly.
You know, so what did she do wrong? She didn't campaign in the Midwest and the Southern. She did it all
in one swoop, like on one the coast. In one region. Yeah,
on the East Coast, West Coast. So, you know, and she had a few Southern states, but excuse me, lesson learned, you know, you got, listen, you got to visit all these states.
You got to.
But to her, you know, much of her credit, I guess, you know, only 3 months to prepare, you know, that's like Santa Claus, you know, trying to cover the whole world in one night.
I get that. But I'm also looking at it as one major city in 50 states in 50 days. Now, that would have been that would have been tiresome, but it would have been effective.
And look, in many of these states, like Idaho,
Iowa,
North and South Dakota, man, she needed to have gone there 3 and 4 times.
Exactly.
Because that's
where the real pickers are.
Well, that's where black people have no appeal there.
Okay. Yeah. Before we tap in, I want to ask you this quick question. When it comes to Vice President Harris, do you feel like she lost, you know, a lot of her votes due to the political views that she stood on?
It's ironic that you would ask that, because you see, I still point finger at her.
Okay.
Because her primary platform was this freedom train that she was talking about, and it was primarily focusing on the abortion rights for women.
Absolutely. That was like her main focus.
Yeah. Look, man. Yeah. And she'll talk about these kitchen table issues. You just mention that in passing, so to speak.
Yeah. Just kind of like a... Yeah, by the way,
you know what I mean?
I got you.
Because she knew that people was concerned about these things, but she made no concrete effort to elaborate.
Of course, yes.
You know what I mean?
Even with the presidential debate, she didn't really elaborate.
Yeah, man. And so, look, these people are concerned, about, you know, the women are concerned about their rights being taken away from them.
Right.
But was it a real issue? If you're not trying to have an abortion,
what's the issue?
Yeah, you know, we have a few people hung up in the battle, in the ballots, you know, that wanted to have abortions, and because of the existing laws, you know, somebody lose their life, you know, that's significant.
Yeah.
You know. But you spent 3 months pushing that. Mm-hmm. You needed to back up and punt the same issues that President Biden, because you're still part of his cabinet, mm-hmm. you know, you're his vice president, mm-hmm. and in theory, should she have won the campaigns. Mm-hmm. She would have been furthering his attempts.
I agree.
You know, everything that he got started, you know, his infrastructure acts, man. She should have been talking about that. She should have been talking about how the economy, you know, has brought down the inflation. And, you know, yeah, I said, you know, we aren't going to do any drilling. But you know what? If push come to shove, I'd be willing to sign a bill to lease land or to start drilling.
Right.
You know, these are the kind of things that she never talked about.
I agree.
I mean, and if she did, it was very limited.
In my opinion, I feel like she should have had a steer it into the skid type of campaign. You know, what's the main thing that everybody was really, like, really getting into her about? And it was the border control. Now, you know, you go out there and you go, yeah. I was in charge of the border control, and I had to do it based on the lights of what Joe Biden wanted. But now, if you vote for me, I will crack it down. I will do this. I will do that. Like she should. Right. I feel like she should have steered it to the skid and kind of give those guys a peace of mind and kind of give them something else to try to find to discredit you.
So, but you know that's where you use the colloquialism, crap roll downhill.
Yes.
You know.
Absolutely.
And I would have just, you know, like kicking the can down the road, as mm-hmm. Obama would call it.
Right.
Well, I did what my boss asked me to do.
Exactly.
You know, he wanted me to go to El Salvador or, you know, some of these other countries as a backdoor attempt mm-hmm. to solve the invasion on our southern border.
Right.
That's what I did. Now, give me the opportunity to be your commander in chief. We can fix this.
Exactly.
You know.
And that's exactly what I meant by staring into the skid.
Yeah, you know,
she try to get ahead of it, you know, put the horse in front of the cart, so to speak.
Right, right. So in all of that, you know, campaign stuff.
Right.
You know, I still saw and still see that diversity, equity, and inclusion is being squashed.
Squashed how? How do you mean?
In other words, if you notice, the state of Florida passed a bill, signed a bill to do away with diversity.
Mm-hmm.
The former president also attempting to do the same thing once he take over office.
Mm-hmm.
How come they are so willing to get rid of the DEI programs? Now, I asked myself that question.
Right.
And I couldn't come up with a reason that's great enough to agree with them. See, so when you think about the need for DEI programs,
mm-hmm.
your mind should go all the way back to the 1964.
Okay.
You know, when we had the government used to have quotas.
Absolutely.
You know, you had to hire so many minorities
in order to make the quota.
Yeah, you know, and so if America was on a trajectory where we see that the playing field is level for everybody,
mm-hmm.
then I could say, yeah, let's get rid of this DEI stuff. They call it, white people call it reverse discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to one of my acquaintances, when he called it reverse discrimination, I said, it's only reverse discrimination.
Because I have the power.
Because you're in power, it can't be reverse discrimination. What we're looking at then, we call it, he didn't like it when I said that, you know, like your brother hiring your brother.
Yeah.
You know, that's how we see it.
Absolutely.
You know, so this reverse discrimination only applies when you got a black and a white.
Mm-hmm.
And let's give them all the same experience and the same education.
Mm-hmm.
The same likability and the same influence.
Okay.
Because when you got two candidates that has equal qualifications for a certain job,
mm-hmm.
then the decision comes all the way down to how likable you are with the interviewer.
Right.
You know, what kind of rapport that we build.
Right.
What are the chances of a black man having the equal rapport to a white man as another white man would have?
Well, if DEI goes away, it's going to be very slim.
You know, and that's all I'm seeing.
And then the concerning thing is that it's more than just work. They're trying to eliminate the diversity in schools as well.
Everywhere.
Yeah. So it's like, what does it mean for that one black scholar that has the education, has the GPA, has all of the scores to make it into Harvard, and you don't want to hire, you don't want to accept him because of the color of his skin?
Right.
Or he's not likable according to the essay that he wrote.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
ladies and gentlemen, get ready.
But in all of that though, I still want to highlight the fact that people are starting to regret voting for the former president.
Well, it's
because he's getting ready to change the whole landscape of American democracy.
Absolutely.
You know, now, granted, you know, we've had the office for what, 12 years?
About 12 years, yeah. I'm
sorry. Yeah, yeah.
We had Obama hit it in 08.
Who was in there before him? Was it Clinton or Bush? No, it was
Bush. Bush okay. Handed it to Obama.
Obama.
Obama handed it to Trump. Trump handed it to Biden.
Yeah.
And so, then that was about
so yeah, that. So 12, 14, 12, 16 years, you know. But here, let me say this, and then we'll move on up the road.
Sounds good.
Because each president that goes into office
mm-hmm.
has their own vision for the country.
Absolutely.
Now his primary goal is to sell his vision to the American people.
Right.
So, if I can't get you to realize the effects of climate change, then it's going to be hard for me to sell you an EV.
Right.
If I can't get you to realize the effects of climate change, it'd be hard for me to sell you on solar energy.
Absolutely.
And on and on and on. So when we're talking about the CHIP Act, you know, if you don't accept climate change, you can't see nothing but drilling for oil.
Right.
You know, and that's where we're on our way to. But now, having said that, we will move on up the road. You can't concentrate solely on battleground states.
Absolutely.
You know, 66% white, 89% white.
66, Trump, for, Harris. 66 Harris. For Harris, 89 for Trump.
70. Now she gets 74 million people to vote for her.
Okay.
He, on the other hand, had 77 million. Hmm. Now, guess where those other 3 million votes were that she left on the table was in the Midwest.
Absolutely.
See, that's where those other people are, that if she had traveled her team to the Midwest, that would have been more of a contest.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was like a land sweep, you know.
It was definitely a regional sweep. Ladies and gentlemen, if you ever look at the Democrat Republican map of what states won, it was pretty much, As OG stated, it was the East Coast, West Coast was all blue, and in the middle of the country was all red.
Yeah, man, you know, and as they say, and I can't say it enough.
I was really surprised that New York won Democrat.
Well, I wasn't, because New York have primarily been Demos.
Okay, I didn't know that for sure.
Yeah. Look, that metropolis, man.
You just figure, you know, Trump's office is there, you know.
Was.
Oh, yeah, was.
Yeah.
Well, it could come back now because all of his charges are postponed indefinitely.
Yeah, but those are not the charges that got him kicked out of there.
Okay.
All those charges have been, he's been ousted.
Gotcha.
You know, from the state of New York, man, you know.
How do you get kicked out of a whole city? That's crazy.
Well, just like he's going to get kicked out of the whole United States.
In a minute, if he don't shape it up. Absolutely. Yeah,
well, you know what? Vladimir Putin already warned him that he's not safe in America. Putin, his boy.
Yeah.
Tells him he's not safe, man. You better watch your back and your front and all both sides.
Oh, man.
You know, and the top. You need to watch the top, too.
Yeah, that toupee can just slide.
But at any rate, listen, we're in Article 3 of the United States Constitution, and I think we spoke about it briefly before.
Very briefly.
You know, where we learn that the judiciary powers of the United States be vested in one Supreme Court, you know, which was enacted in 1789.
Okay.
Okay. with the federal system and established the Supreme Court in 1790.
Okay. And
then there are only six justices.
Right.
Just six, and it carried six for 100 years.
Up until they decided to add more.
Yeah, up until we decided to go with nine.
Yeah.
You know, I think there was another odd number change, you know, because they always want to keep it odd so that we can split.
There's a winner.
Yeah, so we can split the odds, you know.
And that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
You don't never want to be deadlocking the vote.
No. And so we talked about this before, and since the Supreme Court first convened in 1790,
okay,
there has been more than 100 judges, and only one have been impeached.
Wait, back up. So judges can be impeached as well?
Well, yeah.
I had no idea.
Well,
yeah. I just thought that they just get, you know, those bar hearings, and then
that's how you get rid of them. You have to impeach them.
Oh, okay.
You know, so in 1804, the House of Representatives voted to impeach an associate justice, Samuel Chase.
Okay.
He was appointed by George Washington. Now,
okay.
Samuel Chase was a. He was actually one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence.
Gotcha.
Okay. He was, it's funny because he was accused of being partisan during civil war. And that's good.
That's hilarious.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Because that's where we should be today.
Right.
You know, we should be looking at the positions that these, the Supreme Court justices are taking on many of these cases, which they are supposed to be nonpartisan on.
Right.
You know, and if you look at, read a lot of their opinions of some of the cases that they litigate.
Right.
You'll see that they, you know, that they're leaning more to the right.
A little bit.
You know, or more to the left, you know, whichever side, one side or the other. Mm-hmm. But they are supposed to go straight up the center.
Right.
They have not any room to show impartiality.
Right.
You know.
Like a pick a side and stay on it.
Yeah. They don't even get to pick a side.
Oh, wow.
You know, they can't lean left or right. They have to go straight up.
Oh, so
nonpartisan.
Okay, so Sam Chase was supposed to be nonpartisan.
Right.
But then he was accused of being subpartisan.
He was being too partisan.
Okay. Or,
yeah, you know, so you can't, they can't, in other words, if we were going to decide on, let's say, the color of the phone.
Okay.
And let's say the phone actually is gold.
Okay.
Okay. And you got to decide for me, because someone took my phone and that looked like the color of my phone. And you go there, well, that phone does look like it's gold.
Okay.
You know, and then the other judge go, well, that phone actually looked more bronze.
Okay.
Than gold.
Okay.
You know, so you're seeing the phone is actually a gold color. You're leaning more toward me.
Right.
You know, and so when they have cases, and there was a couple of ones that was cited that we probably touch on, you know, a little bit later, but they can't pick sides.
Right.
You know, they have to go straight. Hey, look, so if the thing says red, they have to say red.
Gotcha. Yeah. Whatever the rule is.
The rule is. Yeah, they can't, in other words, they can't inject their own opinion about a thing.
Right, right.
You know, so that's the
whole point of being bipartisan is, or nonpartisan, excuse me.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
to, you know, to kind of obey the letter of the law more so than a left or right view.
So Chief Justice Marshall, John Marshall,
okay,
explained these principles. Jurisdiction, he was talking about the jurisdiction and the character of cases.
Okay.
He says that the jurisdictions depends on the character of the cause.
Okay.
And his second point was the jurisdiction depends entirely on the character of the parties.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, so in other words, we don't have any room to side with a particular party as judges.
Right.
You know, so in saying that, we look at the scope and limits of the federal judicial power under the Constitution. The Supreme Court original jurisdiction over cases involved ambassadors, public ministers, consuls, and states. So it says it requires all crimes except for impeachment, see, to be tried by a jury in the state where it was committed.
Gotcha.
So the Supreme Court typically don't take on a case unless it has gone before an appellate court.
Mm.
You know, it has to go through a state court before the Supreme Court.
Gotcha.
Because typically when it gets to the Supreme Court, it's something of an appeal.
Right.
It also explains federal court jurisdiction or the power of a court to hear a case and what type of case the Supreme Courts and other federal courts will hear. The Supreme Court will have appellate jurisdiction in all cases.
Right.
Article 3, however, identifies the circumstances a party and parties to which the judicial power of the national government applies. And this is when it really gets to be really profound, because when we read verbatim what Article 3 is all about, and it goes something like this. Section 3. Well, not Section 3. Article 3 talks about in Section 2, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution, the laws of the United States, and the treaties made or which shall be made under the authority to all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers, and consuls, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, to controversies to which the United States shall be a party. Now, There's nine classes, as they call it,
right,
that the Supreme Court will hear cases on. And as provided by the Constitution, judicial power extends to nine classes of cases and controversies, which falls into two categories or two groups, depending on the character of the case and the character of the parties. As the character of the cause, the judicial power extends to cases arising under the Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made under their authorities. And so I was trying to figure out what cases would probably end up in the Supreme Court. So once these cases have gone before, you know, the states or local judges or whatever the process will be for an appeal, so you'll have controversies between two or more states.
Right.
The Supreme Court will end up looking at that case. Between a state and citizens of another state, between citizens of different states, between citizens of the same state claiming land under grants of a different state,
okay,
or the citizens thereof are foreign citizens of the subject.
Mm.
Then it says the appellate jurisdiction is the power to hear a case after a lower court has already decided the case.
Right.
That is how to establish a case of appeal. So, in other words, the lower courts has to listen to the case first, but even before it go to the Supreme Court.
And this is all can be done after trial, correct?
Well, that's the only way you're going to get to the Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
You know, okay. So you've had some kind of interaction with the courts of your state, and then ultimately you didn't like the decision, so right. you want to appeal it.
Right, right.
So in order to do that, it has to be heard from by your locals.
Okay.
It says in the first jurisdiction depends on the character of the cause,
mm-hmm.
whoever may be the parties. This class comprehends all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution and the treaties. Now, it's funny because when I looked at some of the first time treaties that was ever granted in the United States, is with the class of Indians. So, excuse me. So, they agreed upon, and then they pulled the old switcheroo. They changed their minds.
Right.
You know. And of course, you know the story, how the story ends.
Pretty much.
Yeah, the Indians get pushed up against the wall again.
Yeah.
You know. So this jurisdiction that the court, the Supreme Court has, it's really profound in handling the case. Now the second class jurisdiction depends entirely on the character of the party.
Right.
So what does that look like?
Mm-hmm. I don't really like that though, because it also states somewhere in the same article where the judge had the determination on what's considered controversy, what's not.
Right. That's exactly where we're getting to, because if there be any exception, it is to be implied against the express words of the article. In the second class, the jurisdiction depends entirely on the character of the party.
Right.
Now, so the jurisdiction, depends on the entirely on the character of the party. So that means that in this are comprehended controversies.
Uh-huh.
See, so what they're saying that, look, we can't have, and this is why they come up with this partisan, nonpartisan, because the issues can't be so controversive that I can't render a decision.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if it's that controversial, then it's going to require that I do some personal interpretations.
Right.
You know, in other words, the rule of law states one thing, but if you decide against the rule of law, and they use the case with the Aetna.
Okay.
Where an employee was injured, and so he was receiving benefits from his injury.
Okay.
In doing so, somehow or another, he were not making his premium payments.
Okay.
So he loses coverage and he loses benefits.
Right.
You know, so they're going like, so how do you decide on this? Because you know you have to pay your premiums.
Right.
You know, and the question became whether or not his policy stipulates whether he had to pay premiums even after he become injured. You know, or had he paid in enough to cover his benefits through his recovery.
Right.
You know, so those were issues that was somewhat controversial in that second class. In this comprehended controversy between two or more states, between a state and a citizen of another state, between a state and foreign. Now, the Supreme Court further noted, and the reason they noted, that the judicial power is the power of the court to decide and pronounce a judgment and carry it into effect between persons and parties who's been a case, who brings a case before it for a decision. Okay, so this meaning, the meaning attached to this term case and controversies determines therefore the extent of the judicial power as well as the capacity of the federal courts to receive jurisdiction.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's the whole point when they're talking about the controversies. You know, so now what they ultimately comes up with, the term is called justiciable.
Okay.
Justiciable cases and controversy. In other words, you can't bring a lawsuit if you don't have an interest in the case. In other words, a state, a person sue a state in... The person that's suing the state has no connection to the case.
Right.
In other words, he can't sue on the behalf of
someone else,
everybody else in the state.
Right.
You know, because he doesn't have any interest in the case, really.
Well, that makes sense. I will agree to that piece only because, you know, a lot of people like to play victim on something that they ain't never been into. So it's like, how you gonna sue me?
Well, you know, that's...
How you gonna sue me it didn't happen to you?
Well, I don't know, but when you think of a class action suit, you know...
That, now, see, I that one went
yeah,
to the when back you, of my mind when we was talking about
it. Yeah, but then they're going like, justiciable cases and controversies not only require that disputes be of the types specified under the article, but also that the dispute be in fact actual cases and controversies. In other words, the court don't want you to put them in a position where they're trying to decide the case based on a hypothesis. In other words, hypothetical situations.
Right. We don't.
Yeah, they don't want to get caught up in that.
We don't operate on what ifs.
So in the Aetna Life Insurance, this is what actually happened. The controversy in the sense must be one that is appropriate for judicial determination. Okay. And then it says, with judicial determination, a justiciable controversy is thus distinguished from a difference or dispute of a hypothetical character for one that is academic or moot. You know, they're going like, now we aren't getting caught up in it. And I listened to when they was trying to decide, when the courts, I think it was, I keep saying it was Oklahoma, the first state that protested having Trump on the ballot.
Mm. I think that would have been Maine. No, they followed us.
They followed, yeah. I keep thinking it was Oklahoma. But at any rate, I remember listening to one of the justices saying that we're not going to decide on hypothetical situations.
Right, right.
You know, you got to have facts. You know, we're not going to deal with it on hypotheses. The controversy must be a definite and concrete, is what they're saying. Touching the legal relations of parties having adverse legal interests. So you cannot litigate a case that you have no skin in the game, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You're not one of the persons that are involved.
But see, that's to me, it's almost as if you're trying to turn away until it's too late. Because what if I'm trying to state something along the lines of a possible criminal act being done, and you're telling me, oh, it's hypothetical. Well, when it actually happens, we'll turn to it. Then that's what I get as you read that.
It must be a real and substantial controversy of admitting of specific release through a decree of conclusive character as distinguished from an opinion advising what the law would be upon a hypothetical stated fact.
Come on now. Come on now.
You know, they're going like, no, look, we aren't gonna make a ruling on that. You know, we want you to give us who the guy was, what the guy did, why he did it, who he did it to. You know, we want all facts. We don't want nothing hypothetical. Yeah. You know.
Which is crazy, because when you drop it down to the local authorities and the little people, I like to call it, you know, those guys don't need anything but a you know, conspiracy to commit, and you can get jammed for that. That's enough. That's all they need down here. But then when you're going up to the Congress, the Senates and all of that jazz, you got to actually have done something.
Like, yeah, well, you know, there are factors. Now, in when I think about this, I think about treason.
Right. Conspiring with the other countries and stuff.
Right. Yeah, but you see, even with to prosecute a person for treason, you can't prosecute that person if there isn't two witnesses.
You need two?
Two witnesses, or the defendant has to admit in open court.
Wow.
Himself.
You know? Treason can be beat.
Well, if there's no witness.
Right.
You know, if there's no witnesses, and I think the United States, since the 1800s, there's been maybe 40 cases, only 13 brought to court.
Who that was?
Three people was executed. There's only three.
Only three?
Only three people have been
executed. You said how many cases?
Out of 40 that went to court. I mean, well, 13 went to court, but there have been 40 cases.
40 allegations, 13 cases, and three got executed.
Yeah.
That's a very low number.
Well, that tells you a couple of things.
Like 4%.
That tells you a couple of things, too. Tells me, in other words.
What's that?
That if you got 40 people that were up for treason, either you don't have witnesses, mm-hmm, or the person didn't admit.
Right.
So now, you're a suspect for treason, so you're going to sit in jail until such time that we get two witnesses or you confess. And I think that's a lot of times, that's why we have Guantanamo Bay.
Right.
With those inmates over there. you know, they just sitting there, man, waiting for case to come to court, but they got to get the right evidence to bring them to court.
So you just got
you're a suspect. To,
yeah,
they're just suspicious of a crime.
Right. You don't like that, man.
Well, but guess what? If I let you go, you're gonna go out and
probably do it again.
Do it. Even if you didn't do it the first time, you may, decide to do it for real this time.
Yeah, but your judicial power states that I would have to actually have done it for you to actually pursue the case. But
in part of those same words define the role assigned to judiciary is a tripartite.
A what?
A tripartite. Allocation of power to assure that the federal court will not intrude into areas committed to other branches of government. That's why you have this justiciability in the term of the art employed to give expressions to this dual limitation placed on the federal courts in the cases of controversial documents. You see it?
I had to look up the definition of tripartite because I was like, I've never heard that word a day in my life. And it just smacked me right then and there. So I was like, let me see what that means.
So what does it tell you?
Now, the definition, now, I don't know if I spelled it right. Tripartite, that's T-R-I-P-A-R-T-I-T-E.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So ladies and gentlemen, the meaning of tripartite in English is involving three or more three people or organizations or existing in three parts. A tripartite agreement brought together government, industry, and labor unions in an effort to reduce unemployment. Now, that's just the definition that they gave me for whatever situation that they have that set for. But, you know, just hearing that and then hearing, you know.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. But they go on and say, you know, a real interest.
Right.
A real interest requires that a real issue be presented.
Mm.
As contrast with speculative, abstract, hypothetical, or moot issues.
Mm. Okay.
They don't want those.
They don't want the shoulda, coulda, woulda.
No, they want real issues.
They want this DC sniper. That's what they want.
Yeah, they don't want no facsimile, man. They want the actual case.
They want cold, hard truth.
Yeah, so.
And that says something. Because I always ask this question every podcast we do when we're talking about the Constitution. How did these guys back in the 1700s, come up with these laws and these decrees and had it in mind for generations to come?
Well, yeah, I don't know if you remember when we first started this journey with the Constitution. You remember I was telling you about Benjamin Franklin stated that, you know, the reason why there's so much hindsight. See, he understood human behavior.
Right, right.
He knew that if a person given enough power, they would manipulate it.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's why they have so many checks and balances, mm-hmm. you know, in the Constitution, because, you know, people are not, you know. I said this before. Rollo May says people are basically good in nature.
Right.
But when you entrust a person, you know, with your life, we'll say.
Right.
You know, give them a half a chance, they'll become a thief.
And
give them a half a chance, I'm gonna say this, and I want somebody to mark my word. Watch what happens with this administration that's going to take office on January 20th. Everybody that he got any voted for or
elected
for his cabinet,
right,
has got some backdoor issues.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
From him all the way down, you know? So watch the theft. And the allegations of theft.
Oof.
Watch the underhandedness of this administration that's going in there. It's not going to be pretty.
It's not.
It's not going to be pretty.
It's not.
And so that's what Franklin was talking about. Look, we give you guys the power, and you'll just abuse it.
Absolutely.
You'll abuse it.
Absolutely.
So now, the constitutional requirements for standing. So that's the, you remember I told you they said, you know, you have to have standing.
Right.
On a case in order to bring a case.
Absolutely.
The constitutional requirement for standing under Article 3 requires that the plaintiff has personally, one, suffered some actual or threatened injury.
Okay.
Okay. Number two, that the injury can fairly be traced to the challenged action of the defendant.
Mm.
Okay. And the third one, that the injured is likely to be redressed by a favorable decision. In other words, whatever decision that the court decide will tend to make the defendant whole for his loss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when we think about that, then you start to realize that you can't just say, I want to sue the state or sue the federal government because they decided not to embrace science. Well, did that affect you personally? You know, there have been thousands of lawsuits against the Biden administration, you know. But can they win them? Because there was no personal...
No bodily harm.
Yeah. They have no loss.
There was no redress. There was...
Yeah. You know. See, so that's why they can't prevail with a lot of these cases that they filed against the federal government anyway.
A good lawsuit, and I'm going to leave it there, would be the Part 5. The five boys that got wrongfully convicted... You know, that was the perfect class action suit against the state. Because you booked these five young men for a crime that they didn't commit.
Right.
You guys abused these kids. You know what I'm saying? And there was more than two witnesses. ladies and gentlemen, come January 6th. January 5th. What is it? When they take off?
20th.
January 20th. Come January 20th. Fasten your seatbelt, grab your popcorn, and get on this news, because I guarantee you every day is going to be a flip of the head of something else that this man has done. Guys, ladies and gentlemen, also keep in mind, man, let's not waste the court's time. Because the more that we waste the court's time, the less they're willing to look at our cases. I don't really like the fact that controversy is used in way of bias. Because controversy means something entirely different than it does in real life versus in the Constitution. I do like the fact that Article 3 mentions the character of the partisans. You know, so if you're acting out of character, that's red flags for you there.
Right.
Love that. Love everything about that. So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you guys definitely learned something, because I certainly did. The tripartite. I learned that today. OG, what'd you leave it with, man? Talk to him.
Look, just, you know, as he said, guys better buckle in. I don't know how many political buffs that are listening to this this audio, but if you are, you're in for the ride of your life.
Absolutely.
So buckle up, and I don't know where to tell you to put your inhibition, your nerves and all, you know, just put them in a place where it doesn't affect anybody else, man, because it's going to... Yeah, it's going to be some jaw-dropping moments.
All 2025.
You know. So we're expecting to see the federal government revamped. In new perspective. What's talking about, let me just say this, because when we're talking about DEI, you know, and when we think about reverse discrimination, how is it not discriminatory for a political party to get rid of all of the federal employees and hire only his party employees for federal positions? Now, you're talking about discriminatory, you're talking about DEI, you know, think about that. Reverse discrimination, reverse discrimination. So this is what we're going to be looking forward to, see how effective. Now, having said that, they will not be able to accomplish a lot of these issues because they can only afford to lose 3 votes in most of the issues. They got the House and the Senate.
Right.
But when it goes to the floor, we already know that at least 15 Republicans aren't going to be with them on many of the issues. So there's still an uphill battle for them, but pay attention. A lot to be learned in 2025.
Absolutely, absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, my only thing I'm going to leave y'all with is, I said it on every other podcast I do, get your affairs in order. Now, the difference is on the other podcast that I do, I always say get your affairs in order because you never know your death date.
Right.
I'm telling you guys here on this show to get your affairs in order because 2025 is not the year to get to spending money.
No.
2025 no. is not the year to be calling out of work. 2025 is not going to be the year where you let everything go to the back burner. The more you let go to the back burner, dog, more uphill battle you will have throughout 2025.
Oh, and let me leave this with you.
Drop it.
16-17-year-olds, considering the ones that are in school.
Right.
You know, do your pre-registrational voting registration. And let's get prepared for 2028. We don't want to wait to the last minute because there are issues that we'll be talking about between now and then, you know, and we're not going to wait to the last minute to start the push for registrations. And hopefully we can, as Democrats, can take over some more of the seats that we've lost, especially in the Senate and Congress.
Absolutely.
So,
ladies and gentlemen, y'all been tuned in to Walker the Walker, soon to be one of the most talked about podcasts and political houses. And all I'm gonna leave you with at this point is, if you did not vote, don't come to me or OG and complain. Y'all stay blessed out there, man. Love, love, love.
Yeah, man. What is it called? Bonafide?
Bonyism.
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 I think I've seen that. That's the one you sent me?
Absolutely.
Yeah.